tell you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. In the first hour, we're going to be talking about, as we speak right now, this very moment, the General Assembly ramming through the final bits and pieces of their ideological fair. We're going to find out how bad it's going to be, how much we've given away, how much of the store is gone. Also going to talk about charter schools. Again, you know, more of the bad legislation. And who stole the American dream? In the second hour, we're going to talk about Social Security, education, Pell Grants, much more, along with the third hour, taxes, 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 and news from across the nation. All throughout the program, your calls, your thoughts, your questions, comments, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, or you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So the handouts, well, the handouts that we've given, thanks to House Bill 2626, passed 111-80. Understand, here in the state of Pennsylvania, in the House of Representatives, it is 112 Republicans to 91 Democrats. So without knowing, it's probably a pretty good bet that this was an ideological vote. And the idea being was, look, you know, they're giving $5 million away. Look, it could have been much worse. Be glad it's only $5 million. But they're giving $5 million away so they can go back to their districts and say, we passed a job-creating bill, even though there's no clawback, there's no mandate that a job is actually created, and we've gone through that. This is just a handout. Just go here, you know. Here's some money. Thanks for being here. And they're going to be able to turn around, especially if this is a party-line vote, and say, oh, Democrats, they don't want to create jobs. And I keep going back to the Romney thing last night. Government doesn't create jobs. And you go, well, what did this $5 million handout, what's that supposed to do? Because every piece of legislation that I see my Republican friends pursue that they call job-creating legislation is really a handout. It's welfare. It's corporate welfare. Call it what it is. We're giving these corporations money in the hopes that maybe, possibly, they'll consider, if they need to, create a job. I mean, those of us who are rational realize that doesn't work. Those people who bother to look at the facts know that that doesn't work. People who live in the real world know that doesn't work. It's basically lucid, sane, rational people. They get that. That if I give someone a whole bunch of money, they're not going to create a job. They may take a vacation. They may treat themselves to a nice dinner and, you know, good movie, whatever. But they're not going to create a job. What creates jobs? And it doesn't get any simpler than this. It's this one word called demand. Someone wants your product. Someone demands what you're producing, what you're selling. You will fill that demand. That creates jobs. Pretty simple stuff to me. But here, we've just given another $5 million away. But, you know, like I said, it could have been much worse. There was no cap before. Now it's just $5 million so they can have their election year sloganeering. And that's really all it's about. Because they realize that most voters are overwhelmed with attack ads, overwhelmed with rhetoric, overwhelmed with BS. So when a Republican says, we passed this House Bill 2626 and it's a job creator, you go, well, did it create any jobs? Well, no, it's not going to. But we did give employers, you know, $5 million. And then they'll be able to turn around and say, they voted against it. And it's this political back and forth without any real reality. And we as the electorate had better wake up to the reality that, you know, all of the money that we think we're paying, all of the taxes that we think we're paying that is supposed to be going to roads and bridges and taking care of people, is actually being handed out and funneled to the very wealthy, to the very well-to-do. I mean, that's what gets me. Look, I believe working people are taxed enough already. I believe that. And we're taxed not to help poor people, not to help students, not to help infrastructure. We're taxed to help the Romneys of the world. I think that came out last night in the debate. And speaking of the debate, oh, is the right wing nuts over Candy Crowley? One of the press releases I got said that, well, if CNN continues to employ her, they should have to register her as an Obama-supporting super PAC for pointing out that Romney was absolutely wrong. And for the longest time, I've been wanting moderators to go, well, hold on, that's not quite accurate. Because understand, they went Candy Crowley, and I thought when she did it, I go, that she's going to get beat up over that. But she's right; she did correct the misstatement and the lie that Romney was telling repeatedly. And I think that it just got on her nerves that it was repeatedly wrong, and he kept saying it, kept saying it, kept saying wrong, 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 wrong. But who's going to stop it? Well, she pointed out, look, the next day the president came out and said it's a terror. Terror attack. Pretty simple stuff. And, you know, this another group sent me a thing saying, well, last night's debate moderator broke the basic rules of her job when she went beyond taking sides. She called Mitt Romney a liar. No, she didn't call him a liar. She told him what he was saying was wrong. That is not calling him a liar. That's correcting him. Had she said, Mitt, you're a liar, that would be calling him a liar. Pretty simple stuff. But right after the debate, you know, like I said last night, expect the second these questions are out, it's dumb people. This is the Obama people planning the questions. Fake news over on Fox. 30 seconds after the debate ended, their one anchor, Megyn Kelly, gets on and, you know, she's going after the questions. And this is what she said about the questions, which, again, you know, you expect from fake news on Fox.
And the questions, 11 questions asked in all, and some of which will certainly be discussed tomorrow, topics that we haven't heard much about at all in this presidential campaign. Equal pay for women. In fact, there were a lot of women issues discussed. Abortion, contraception, women's pay, as I mentioned. Some might argue was obvious pandering to women because the female vote is so important this election.
Yeah, things we have never heard before. Things we haven't heard. Haven't heard at all about equal pay for women. Haven't heard at all. Haven't heard about abortion. Haven't heard about contraception. Hasn't been an issue at all. Nothing. Nothing. Some would say they're pandering to women. No, I think there's an obvious, really a major obvious difference between the two parties when it comes to women's issues. You've got Mitt Romney, who wants to defund Planned Parenthood, where a lot of women get health care from. Not abortions, screenings, gynecological exams, cancer testing, you name it, birth control, whatever, they get, that's where they go. He wants to end that. And a lot of women who use it see that as an attack on them. And you look at some of the things that Romney said last night, the whole, go home, make me dinner, woman, kind of go, where was that coming from? What exactly was that? The whole binder thing? Really? His record? Less than stellar. Even though he says, well, you know, I had more women. Nonsense. Debunked already. It was debunked within 10 minutes of the debate last night. But for him, it's not about being factually accurate. It's about looking like you're right. It's about whatever you're going to say, even if it's completely the opposite. And later on, we're going to talk about the contraception flip that he made right there. And it was just a quick sentence, man. He had flipped completely back to old moderate men. The guy who made sure that women in Massachusetts have access to birth control, well, while he was right-wing Mitt, said that they should. And you look at the assault that the right has, just all day today, has gone after this Catherine Fenton, you know, the woman who had the audacity to ask the question about, you know, shouldn't women be able to get equal pay? Shouldn't they be able to make sure that they can support themselves? What do you think about that, Mr. President? And really, to be honest, the question was, it was a softball to Obama. Because he's the guy who passed the Lilly Ledbetter Act. Well, how I wish you'd have answered it is, look, I want to make sure that people have the right to collective bargaining. Man, woman, child, Martian, I don't care. You're doing a job, you get paid for it. See, that's how you end this discrimination. Contracts. The right loves them. The wealth class lives by them. You never see a CEO without one. Yet their workforce, they do everything they can do to make sure that your workers don't have a contract. But I look at this right-wing publication, the Free Beacon, who went on a nice little smear campaign of the 24-year-old woman who had the audacity to ask about equal pay. They went after her Twitter account and, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. Well, she likes to get drunk, blackout drunk, and get wet and all of this stuff. And you go, really? Is that what you get for asking a question? And the answer is yes. That's what the right-wing hate machine does. And I would hate to see her email account and some of the angry nonsense that's coming through that. Because that's what they do. It's about fear. It's an intimidation.
Anglers will know, you know, night crawlers. Right. You get the idea. Night crawly. I can't get it. Such punishment. But no, I hope we can engage in a conversation, because there are two things at work here. One is that people who have their eyes open, I think, as Charles Pierce noted over on his blog at Esquire, saw the real Romney. Hateful, mean, spiteful, snarky, disrespectful. By God, I think if he could have gotten away with it, he would have tackled Barack Obama to the ground and shaved his head. Don't you? I mean, there are a series of photos that show him sneering and scowling and, horrifying looks. Just nasty. And it was telling that it was a question about gender pay equity. Not just gender equity, gender pay equity. Things like the Lilly Ledbetter Act, that Bishop Willard decided he was not going to answer and instead started ad-libbing. And whenever Bishop Willard goes off book, he opens his mouth and bats fly out. So that when we saw him say, instead of addressing the issue of whether or not women should be legally mandated to be paid the same as men, when we saw him dance around that to say, when I became governor of Massachusetts, to the extent that anyone can, you know, that's one of those little snide, the knife point pinprick kind of things. You know, Massachusetts is ungovernable because they're full of, you know, liberals. So he goes off script, and he says, I looked around and I said, why are all of my cabinet position applications being made by men? Well, Governor, that's who wants to work with you. Well, I want some women's. And we looked around, and we couldn't find any women's. So we reached out to some women's groups, and they sent us binders full of women. The last binder full of women that I saw was the special anniversary edition of Playboy that you could order for a significant amount of change. Binders full of women. He also went on to show his humane bishopy side when he explained that why I made it possible for one of my employees to go home so she could cook dinner. Well, bless your pointy little head, Bishop. Maybe you could have... Nah, wouldn't want to do that. So we really do have a pretty good idea after last night what Bishop Willard thinks of women. They live in binders. I got a big giggle out of our buddy Michael. Thank you, Michael, for kicking in. I think I got a big giggle out of him last night when we were talking about what was in those binders. And I said, Sister Wife Levisa likes to go for long walks by the Great Salt Lake, enjoy sunsets at Mountain Meadows and a cool glass of buttermilk. Her hobbies include midwifery and scoping out the next potential sister wife. But the funny thing about the binders full of women is that, honest to God, if you were around Bishop Willard Romney and he said that it was raining outside, wouldn't you just get your little tanning reflector and swab, just cover yourself in tanning oil and get your blanket and run out in the yard? Because the man is constitutionally incapable of telling the truth. The bishop is. When he was talking about those binders full of women, it, like everything else that, that emanates from his mouth, that does not involve his own personal wealth, is simply not true. And the fact checkers out there have gone after the binders full of women story with a will. I mean, what kind of image does that conjure for you? First of all, it's the 1990s, and I guess we were still using binders back then. Michael tells me that binders full of women on Facebook has gone up to like something around 311,000 likes. But in the story he tells, he says that, well, let's go to the audio just so that we've got it all squared up.
And I said, well, gosh, can't we find some women that are also qualified? And so we took a concerted effort to go out and find women who had backgrounds that could be qualified to become members of our cabinet. I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women. I was proud of the fact that after I staffed my cabinet and my senior staff, that the University of New York in Albany did a survey of all 50 states and concluded that mine had more women in senior leadership positions than any other state in America. Now, one of the reasons I was able to get so many good women to be part of that team was because of our recruiting effort.
Because, yeah, okay. So that seems pretty straightforward, right? As noted over at Daily Coast, in a diary entry by Kylie Joy Gray about Mitt Romney's binders full of women, guess what? It's BS is the title. She writes, just one teeny tiny little problem with Miss Vote For Me Because Binders pitch. She says, as David S. Bernstein explains, it's bullshit. David S. Bernstein writing, what actually happened was that in 2002, wow, it wasn't the 1990s, I'm sorry. I guess I need a fact checker. Prior to the election, not even knowing yet whether it would be a Republican or Democratic administration, a bipartisan group of women in Massachusetts formed MassGAP, M-A-S-S-G-A-P, to address the problem of few women in senior leadership positions in state government. There were more than 40 organizations involved with the Massachusetts Women's Political Caucus, also bipartisan, as the lead sponsor. They did the research and put together the binder full of women qualified for all the different cabinet positions, agency heads and authorities and commissions. They presented this binder to Governor Romney when he was elected. Bernstein continues, I have written about this before in various contexts. Tonight I've checked with several people directly involved in the MassGAP effort who confirm that this history as I've just presented it is correct, and that Romney's claim tonight that he asked for such a study is false. In other words, the man is a liar. Now, Barack Obama is too nice to call him the liar that he is. And we know that the for-profit media sphere would be awash in gasps and pearl clutching if he was to do such a thing and talk about the lack of civility in our political discourse. You know, after a year of racial smears and epithets and allegories and analogs. But if he were to call Bishop Willard Romney the liar that he is, the for-profit media would probably have a collective case of the turtle squirts. By the way, Mr. Bernstein also notes that when the positions were filled in the Romney administration in Massachusetts, none of the senior positions Romney cared about, budget, business development, so forth, went to women. Secondly, a UMass Boston study found that the percentage of senior-level appointed positions held by women actually declined throughout the Romney administration. So he may have some binders full of women, but I'm guessing that those binders full of women probably have the pages all stuck together. I don't suppose we should be surprised. Yeah, that number is 316,000 likes on Facebook for binders full of women. Romney's underscore binder has buku followers on Twitter now. And so you have to ask yourself, and this is the second part of whatever if this is passing for analysis, we come to the second part of it, and that is this. So, with the world having been shown last night, because the frustrating part of the first pageant was that Barack Obama just let another rasher full of lies. I think there were 28 in the first pageant from the bishop. Go by unchallenged, and he even let a couple of pitches go past him right over, hanging curveballs right over the middle of the plate. But to the extent that the American people have now seen that Bishop Willard Romney is so power mad that he will lie even over trivial things in order to get his hands on that to which he thinks he is deserving by privilege. Remember, Ann Romney told America that we lumpin' proletariat, we hoi polloi, we filthy proles, don't understand how privileged we are to have a good man like Bishop Willard Romney be willing to be our glorious leader. Into a dim and dark and terrifying future. Jesus Christ, the present itself is terrifying enough. The Romney future has no lights in it. I don't care how much he and Barack Obama talked about what fans of coal they are. I listened carefully. I didn't think I heard the word clean, which was at least a bonus. We still don't have a discussion of climate change. Because the only way we could have a discussion about climate change in this country, or during these pageants at least, would be to use it as character impeachment evidence against the bishop. Because the bishop was concerned about climate change before he decided he wanted to be president of the United States, because by God, he deserves it. Which means that he had to get in bed with people who, unlike him, did not believe in climate change. Or who, more importantly, did not know that climate change is real. Believe is a word that we should not be using in context with climate change. One either knows the science or one does not. Science does not and has never called upon anybody to engage anything but their intellect It is not a question of faith. But all that having been said, no, it would just be impeachment evidence against Willard. Because last night it was all just a little, it was so precious, both men blowing kisses at the coal and the oil industry. With at least President Obama making passing reference to the fact that he thinks we ought to think about some green, sustainable, futuristic energy and move in that direction. One of the more disgusting, unmannerly, rude moments for the son of privilege, Bishop Willard, was when he tried to lecture Candy Crowley. By the way, as our buddy Dennis just reminded me, the bishop was cheated again. You know, we caught him pulling notes out of his pocket at the first pageant. At this pageant, there was an agreement, you know, a contract, in paper, in writing, signed, four corners, that said neither candidate will directly address the other. Well, they both did it, but the first to do it and the worst to do it was Bishop Willard. There was still a lot left to be desired out of the pageant. But at least Barack Obama put one right across Willard's chin and then walked away as the pageant concluded. Irish Dave is incorrigible. Which sister wife has the dressage horse named Sibian? So then the second part of the analysis. We watched and saw what we thought was a bit of a comeback on the part of Barack Obama. But then we saw the flash polling start coming in. Because people cannot be left, the for-profit media cannot...
Undoubtedly appreciated the writer's disdain for those who so insolently dare to criticize and even demonize those worthy ones at the top who, as she explained, gained their wealth through their own efforts. Also, you can almost hear the rich applaud appreciatively as she scorns the divide between the 1% and the rest of us as a, quote, flawed prism marred by hyperbole, half-truths, and unnecessary pessimism about what it means to succeed in America. Passionately deploring diatribes against the 1%, Miss Easton assails critics of America's widening inequality as being people who want to raid the gold pot. On behalf of the pampered rich, she issues her own emotional grito, wailing that critics must stop the name-calling. Does Easton propose any specific remedies for the rising inequality that's shutting out the many? You betcha, and it just happens to be one that's a favorite of Mitt and the Millionaires Club, one that they prescribe for any and all of our nation's economic woes. Corporate tax reform. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's unclear why Fortune felt the need to print this piece of fluff or why Easton got the assignment, but her credit line does mention that her husband is, quote, senior strategist for the Romney campaign. Curious, huh?
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The second topic, which is you said you get a deduction for taking a plant overseas. Look, I've been in business for 25 years. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Sure he could. He got away, and he got away with a huge tax break to boot. And you look at what's going on right now with the spawn of Romney's loin, Bain Capital. Right now, as we speak, the trucks are loaded, the trucks are moving, and all of those machineries from Sensata Technologies going to China. And we're subsidizing it. Okay, they're going to be able to write it off. And what really irks me, and there's part of me that goes, I don't know how Obama can't know that this is going on. It's been in the news. I can't imagine that one of his advisors didn't go, hey, right now, Bain Capital, Romney's loins, the spawn of Romney, is at this moment shipping jobs to China. I can't imagine why that didn't come up. And I was waiting for it. It was served up on the platter. The question about outsourcing, it was right there. And then you go, bang, you go get them. Because you know what's amazing to me? For all the tough talk that Romney threw out on China, I'm going to label them. I'm going to label them. You know that? I'm going to label them. He could stop. He could have some input. He could do something about those 170 jobs in Elwood, Illinois. But he hasn't made a peep. So what makes you think? And this is one of those moments where you go, stop and think about this from just a purely common sense point of view. Right now, he could go to Bain Capital, the spawn of his loins, his creation, the people who have taken his marching orders. He set the direction of that company. He set the ideology. He set the mission statement. He did all of that. They're following what he had done in the past. He could, this is an election time, get this. He could make huge news if he would pick up the phone, call Bain and say, hey, not now, don't do it. Let's have a press conference. Let's go there. Let's save those jobs so I can be the hero. I can be the one who saved 170 American jobs. I can be the guy who said, look, I did something about China other than deliver a line and come up with some BS. But he hasn't done it because he doesn't believe in it. And if you think he's going to be tough on American companies in China, you need to have your head examined because they're the ones that he's profiting from. Understand, Bain, who took over the Sensata Technologies, has quadrupled their investment in just 6 years. Quadrupled. And that's not enough. They want more. And at some point you go, how did this happen? How did the American dream get outsourced and sold off to the highest bidder? How did it happen? This guy, Hendrik Smith, there's a video of him giving a lecture out in Washington State. He's the guy who wrote the book, Who Stole the American Dream. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner. He's, you know, a veteran investigative reporter. And he goes and he says, look, you know, here's the reality. We built a strong middle class in the 50s and 60s. We had income equality. We were becoming a more egalitarian society. And look, it's just not this guy writing this book. There are hundreds of these books, and it's what I've been talking about for years. During the 50s and 60s and then into the 70s a little bit, you had this push towards democracy, towards equality, where workers said, you know what, we should have some say in what we do. And that was the pact. Corporations made that pact with government. Government made it with companies and workers. Everybody was working together. There was conversation. There was negotiation. And everybody grew better together. Corporations paid their taxes. Workers paid their taxes. Things were humming right along. Then you had the 1970s. Because the wealth class in this country said, well, you know what? All those wages we're paying workers, we could make more money. All of those benefits that we're paying out, that's ours. That was our brethren of the past, the robber barons of the past. They got to keep that money. They didn't have to provide pensions or health care or minimum wage or safe working conditions. They didn't have to do any of that. Why should we? And we're going to fight back. So, and as I've talked about for some time, they went on the assault. And Lewis Powell, a corporate attorney at the time, one of the tobacco lobbyists at the time, wrote a nice little piece, playbook, if you will, and I suggest everyone Google Lewis Powell and look up the Powell memo. It's a very nice, well-orchestrated, well-executed playbook because they've done just about everything. But what it comes down to is what Hendrik points out. is that you have this gang of six, and not McCain and the other idiot Republicans and the three Democrats, the three Republicans, the nuts. Get out of here with those idiots. The Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, the National Association of Manufacturers, the National Federation of Independent Business, the National Restaurant Association, and the National Association of Wholesale Distributors, all of these corporate unions, if you will, true thugs, true muscle men, true hitmen, pushing this idea that, wow, we need to destroy any dissent from our agenda, from the quote-unquote free market. And then they go and they lobby huge amounts of money. And, you know, I talked about the study I read from April of 2009. Three professors from the University of Kansas. They found that, you know, a particular one-time tax break by several of these multinational corporations, they got about a 22,000% return on their lobbying expenditures. In fact, they found for every dollar that was spent on lobbying, and we're talking huge amounts of money, for every dollar spent on lobbying, the big corporations received about $220 back in legislation that they wanted. Huge tax handouts, huge loopholes, huge subsidies. And you think about all of these lobbyists, tens of thousands of them. In 2011, corporate America spent $3.3 billion lobbying our government. And it wasn't just American companies. It was foreign companies. It was everybody, because they all want a piece of it. You know who doesn't have lobbyists? You know who doesn't have representation in Congress most of the time these days? You, me, average everyday working people. We're the ones who are getting screwed in this. And you hear someone like Romney start talking about, wow, you know, we need to be more business friendly. Really? Are you kidding me? The reality is we're on a path to complete and total domination by the 1%. And I don't know if you saw the Patriot op-ed from a couple of weeks ago. A professor from, I think he's from Penn State, the Harrisburg campus, a guy named Robert Russell. He said, look, you know, the reality is we've got distribution of this income in this country with the same characteristics as a third world country. He says what history teaches is that when wealth becomes concentrated in restricted elites, it will be used to co-opt the political process to ensure that the elite groups retain economic advantage. He said this process seems well underway in the U.S., as the enormous expenditures of the wealthy on the current election indicate. He says democracies survive only when both economic and political power are widely shared. He says we're moving away from this ideal toward plutocracy. He said the time to stop the slide is now before it's too late. And I would say, you know what? I actually think it's almost too late. I think it is too late. I think we've given too much. I think the working class of this country has been brainwashed too much, and we need to have massive suffering. Because right now, you look at, if you're born into the lower class, if you're born into poverty, chances are you're going to stay in poverty. That social mobility, not there anymore. And you look at countries like Denmark or Australia or Norway or Canada, or Sweden, or Germany, or France, the socialist country of France, they have much higher rates of social mobility than we do. We're somewhere down, what was it, Uganda? And you go, maybe Romney's right. We can do better. But we can do better without the policies that he's shoveling. Because the policies that he's shoveling is what got us into this mess in the first place. More tax handouts for the very wealthy, more business-friendly policies, more deregulation, more insane open border trade, the territorial tax that he wants to implement. I'm telling you, we're heading down the wrong path, and it's because of policies like his. Go back to the Bush years. If you lived through the Bush years, go back and relive those years. Because that's what Romney's going to bring us. Only worse. Let's take a quick break. Break back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
While the poor man pays the band, pull their bills and need for killing me. Lord have mercy on the working land.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Earth, sky.
In 2007, the planet Saturn's large moon Titan was found to have bodies of liquid, lakes, and seas on its surface. In August 2012, NASA passed over an idea to land a craft in the seas of Titan.
Then, in late September 2012, Spanish engineers announced their concept for a boat to sail Titan's seas. They're proposing a mission they call the Titan Lake In-Situ Sampling Propelled Explorer, or TALIS. It would include a boat probe that would land in the middle of a large lake in the north polar region of Titan.
After a successful landing, the boat would move across the lake, propelled by wheels or paddles. It'd head for a nearby coastline on Titan's lake, taking scientific measurements along the way. The engineers suggest the mission would last around 6 months to a year.
A Spanish engineering firm called Grupo Sener and the Centro de Astrobiología in Madrid, Spain, formed a partnership to study the Titan boat concept. They say the mission isn't far past the concept phase at this time.
And by the way, these lakes on Saturn's moon Titan don't contain liquid water. Instead, they contain liquid methane. Exploring them would be exciting. We have more at EarthSky.org. Search for the words Titan boat. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
This is cancer. This isn't a sudden crisis that's going to erupt out of the ground like some monster trying to eat us. This is a slow, wasting process.
I kept the promise till the vow got broke. I had to drink from the loving cup. I stood on the banks till the river rose up. I saw the bride in a wedding gown. I was in the house when the house burned.
I'm telling you, more of right-wing policy, more tax cuts for the wealthy, more handouts for big corporations, and I'll tell you, the house is going to burn down. And there'll be no fire department to come put it out because, oh, we won't be able to pay the subscription. Just like down in conservative world there in Tennessee where, hey, well, sorry, you couldn't afford the $75? Well, you know what? Your house is going to burn down, and we're going to watch and roast marshmallows. That's conservative world. That's how we take care of our neighbors. That's how we're a community. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. If you missed any portion of the first hour of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website. Take the program on the go with your smartphone by getting the Stitcher app. Andy emailed me during the break. Are you kidding? Facts don't matter to Republicans. It's Edward L. Bernie's propaganda time. He says facts are silly things. Paraphrasing ex-president Ronald Reagan, he says they will say anything to win, then blast it through the media echo chamber to give it that seal of veracity. And look, I mean, that's what they do. I mean, it is the big lie. And where Candy Crowley got kind of into trouble last night is Romney kept repeating the big lie. Well, Obama knew and he didn't say anything for 14 days, which is nonsense. And anybody who's followed it knows it's nonsense, but she wasn't supposed to speak up. Supposed to continue to allow him to, you know, keep throwing that out there. And this whole thing about, and I don't know if you paid attention to Romney's rant on energy. And over the years, he has been all over the place. On one side, you know, the free market guy, while he was moderate, Mitt, he was, well, these coal power fire plants are killing people. We need to shut them down. First he was against coal, now he's again for it. And, you know, what's interesting to me is if you look at his statements, like the one he says, you know, coal production is not up, coal jobs are not up. The reality is coal jobs are up. There are about 1,500 more coal jobs now than when Obama took office. They are producing more. The problem is right now it's kind of slowing down. According to the West Virginia Center on Budget and Priorities, they're saying that, look, you know, the reason? The price is falling. So the free market is deciding not to invest in it. The Chinese aren't getting as much because they're digging their own. They have connected some of their infrastructure. Free market. And this whole thing about energy prices and gas prices. The one thing I think we need to realize, oil is a global commodity. So he can bring up the Keystone Pipeline until he is blue in the face. We already know that it is not going to drop the needle one iota. And when he says, I'll fight to create more energy in this country and to get America energy secure, and that's part of bringing that pipeline oil from Canada. And where is it going, Mitt? Where's that pipeline going? Well, it's going to Texas. And where's that oil going as it flows through the pipeline, going right through the middle of our country? Well, it's flowing into the international market. And I've said before, you want to build a pipeline to Chicago, mandate that oil has to stay here and does not go into the international market? Okay, I'm with you. Let's build it. Yes. But Rick, that's socialism. No, that's helping to make your country energy independent. And what Mitt had to say is, he's got a plan, evidently. His plan is to, well, he thinks he's going to make North America energy independent within 8 years. And how's he going to do that? Well, by eliminating the CAFE standards. You know, the ones that have been moving us to more independence, have been moving us away from needing so much. Because understand, during the Obama years, we've actually imported less oil because of things like having high efficiency standards. But, you know, Mittens wants to eliminate that. Yet, if you look at his campaign, you look at how he's going to get energy independent, or claims he's going to, he takes the efficiency standards into account. So he's going to repeal it and think the industry is going to continue, you know, like they have for the last 30 years, all on their own. I mean, think about what the guy is saying. Think about what he's shoveling. I mean, think about the pipeline. The pipeline is nothing more than taking Canadian oil, shipping it through the U.S. and shipping it out into the international waters. It's not going to help us. Now, look, I'm not against building stuff. I'm all in favor of building stuff. And like Obama said, we've built a whole bunch. We got a pipeline that wrapped the whole world. Show me how it's going to benefit us. Sad reality is it's not. So when they say, you know, well, how's it going to affect me at the pump? Well, it's going to affect you at the pump because as the world comes online, as China uses more oil, as India uses more oil, as all of these other countries are using this scarce resource, it's called supply and demand. We learned about it in Economics 101. The more scarce the resource, the higher the price. So wouldn't it make sense? And I'm just throwing this out there from a common sense point of view. Wouldn't it then make sense to try and find a different source of energy, one that is not an international commodity, one that maybe we could renew right here? Because if you look at the reality is this administration, whether you're a coal oil person, whether you're a drill baby drill person or not, this administration has drill baby drilled. There are more needles in the ground today than at any time in this country's history, and we got more needles in the ground right here than the rest of the world combined. But, you know, facts be damned. Because as Andy pointed out, facts aren't important. What's important is taking this one side of the card, this one bit, and presenting that. It's like any con. Because Romney's a good used car salesman. I'd probably buy a used car from him. He's got the slick back hair and everything. But on this, I know better, and you should too. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Social Security. We're going to talk a little bit more about our tax codes. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK. Right back with hour number two. Stick around.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Senator Dick Durbin visited Bainport Tuesday. Jesse Russell reports.
Workers in Freeport, Illinois, continue their encampment and blockade outside of a Sensata factory. Dubbed Bainport, the workers are asking Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney to ask Bain Capital to reconsider moving their jobs to China. Romney is a 51% shareholder in Bain, which he helped found in the early 80s. On Tuesday, the workers were visited by Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, telling the workers there is a solution to help stop the flow of jobs from the U.S. to China, waiting in Washington.
We could pass the Bring Jobs Home to America Act. It's an important bill. It's an important bill. 6 years ago, I introduced it. Last two or three years, it's been Senator Debbie Stabenow out of Michigan. Michigan knows this story pretty well. And here's what it says. If you're going to create a tax code, your tax code ought to have the right values in it.
Durbin said it's time to start rewarding companies that choose to stay on American soil and create American jobs.
Companies that believe in this country, believe in our workers, believe in our families, will give you the tax break to stay in America.
More than 25,000 activists on RootsAction.org are demanding President Obama and Congress commit to not cutting a dime from Social Security and Medicare. The activists say so far 29 U.S. senators have committed not to cut Social Security. Obama so far has refused to commit to not cutting Social Security and Medicare. In fact, he's willing to accept cuts to both programs. A strong majority of Americans, though, oppose making any cuts to those two programs. Social Security is fully funded for many years to come. Removing the cap on payroll taxes for the wealthiest could guarantee Social Security funding with no cuts in benefits. Senator Bernie Sanders has introduced legislation to do that. Both Social Security and Medicare could be fully funded and even expanded without cutting any benefits if politicians decide to represent the will of the American people on those issues. The National Union of Healthcare Workers is suing SEIU, alleging assault and battery by SEIU UHW union stewards. The suit charges that on July 20th, over two dozen SEIU UHW stewards surrounded NUHW Representative Gloria Watkins. The suit says they chanted and clapped in a hostile manner and then verbally and physically attacked Watkins with repeated elbow strikes to her torso. NUHW is trying to get SEIU members at Kaiser Permanente to leave SEIU and join the NUHW. NUHW says as the two unions compete for members, SEIU is allegedly engaging in a pattern of bullying.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Free enterprise has done more to lift people out of poverty, to help build a strong middle class, to help educate our kids, and to make our lives better than all the programs of government combined.
All the government agencies combined, all the programs combined, you know, like that Social Security that my grandmother relies on, you know, that has kept generations of seniors, well, out of poverty, that kept my grandmother out of poverty thanks to this recession and this collapse in 2008. Yeah, much, much better. Oh, yeah, it was much better. It would have been fantastic. It would have been a great idea in 2005 when George Bush was running around the country with the filing cabinet and said, Social Security's broke, just I'll use. We should put it all on Wall Street. Would have been much better. So much better, don't you think? No, not so much. And I look at what Romney was talking about last night, going after Obama, saying, well, you know, he said we'd have by now put forth a plan to reform Medicare and Social Security because he pointed out they're on the road to bankruptcy. And this is a key right-wing frame. They're bankrupt. They're gonna end. They're going to be done, and Granny's going to be screwed. But when you look at the reality, Medicare is not in bad shape. It could pay 88% of its obligations through the year 2085. Social Security's in a little better shape, I think. They can pay, for the next 20-some years, everything it owes, and then on into the future at 75%. If we did absolutely nothing, if we just continued to bury our heads in the sand and did nothing, that's where we would be. There are some very simple, common-sense, easy fixes to this. Like, oh, I don't know, since I pay 100% of my income towards these two programs, maybe we should be asking the very wealthy to kind of do the same thing. Just a thought. But here to talk about how we save Social Security, how we fix it, and talk about the cost of the meager cost of living adjustment, I've guessed, Dan Adcock. He is the Director of Government Relations and Policy for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Dan, thanks for taking time for me.
Good evening, Rick. How you doing?
You know, I look at this, and, you know, it's broke, Dan. It's just broke. It's going to end. It's going to go broke, and Granny's going to be out of luck if we don't screw the next generation.
Right. A lot of hyperbole going on there, I think.
Are we broke? I mean, you know, like I've seen these studies say Medicare is okay, 88% of its obligations till 2085. Social Security, great for the next two decades, will pay 75% of its benefits on into the future, as far as we can see. That doesn't sound like a real bad crisis to me.
Well, Social Security certainly is definitely in very strong shape. You know, obviously there's going to be changes needed to the program, like increasing the cap on Social Security payroll taxes to ensure its long-term solvency. Medicare is something that is a more pressing issue because it's something that we really have to do something about by 2024. But we're well on our way to doing that through passage of the Affordable Care Act and many of the reforms to cut fraud, waste, and the abuse in the program, and to stop taxpayer handouts to private Medicare plans, and also just all the reforms that were done in Medicare to start our health care system so that it rewards quality over quantity, so that when your doctor sees you, your doctor is rewarded for the best possible outcome rather than, you know, an assembly line kind of version of medicine where you're running a lot of people through, but you're not necessarily getting the outcomes, you're not treating managing care rather on a chronic basis rather than treating it on an acute basis. So, I mean, our feeling is that, you know, when we talk about Medicare is important, and it is certainly the 800-pound gorilla in the room, but it is part of the entire healthcare sector. So if you want to save Medicare, then what you need to do is address the entire healthcare sector. And the Affordable Care Act went a long ways towards doing that. It's not the final word on healthcare reform, but you know, as we try to contain costs, as we try to spend our healthcare dollars more smartly, we're also going to help to contain costs in the Medicare program. And we're already seeing that in terms of things like the Part D deductible actually went down this year because of the Affordable Care Act. And premiums didn't rise as much as we thought this year. Any premium increase can be pretty harmful to a lot of people. But when it only increases by $3, you know, that's an achievement. So So there's things that we need to continue to do. We need to build on the success of the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, Medicare can continue to see not only today's seniors, not only today's grannies, but, you know, kids today that are going to be grandparents themselves, you know, by the end of this century.
But, you know, here's the thing, and I've heard this so many times, and, you know, it's a beautiful right-wing frame that I've heard, you know, people in their 20s tell me that, you know, they'll see a UFO before they'll see a Social Security check or a Medicare benefit. And it's been this rhetoric that's really permeated our media because, look, there are some problems, yes, but these are self-inflicted wounds as I see them.
Right. Well, you know, and the problem is there's a lot of myths like that have been allowed to be repeated, and you know, you repeat something often enough, you know, even if it's a lie, people start believing it. You know, the thing that I found is that, you know, I'm actually new to the National Committee, but when I first went to work for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and I've been working in senior issues for most of my career, but, you know, one of the things, when I had casual conversations with family members and friends, that when they heard I was working for this organization, they said, well, you know, I guess we're going to have to eventually increase the Social Security retirement age. And I said, you know, you really don't have to do that. All you have to do is increase the cap on Social Security payroll taxes.
Yep.
And, you know, in addition to some other revenue adjustments that need to be done to the program, you take care of the solvency of the program for the long term. And when you tell people that, they say, well, why don't we do that? And, you know, because when people have that knowledge, it becomes a no-brainer. Because as you said, you know, on your intro, you know, for most people in this country, they're already paying 100%, you know, they're paying up to the cap, the $110,000 cap that they pay your first 6% of payroll taxes on, for Social Security payroll taxes. It's for income that you earn above that amount. You're not paying any Social Security payroll taxes. And, you know, I think it's just simply a matter of fairness that everyone of every income level pays their share. And so that's when you educate people about this issue, you know, it becomes the clear path towards not only making sure the program is there for the long haul, but also making some improvements to the program. Because the problem in this country is, especially because of this recession, is that there's been a real erosion of employer-sponsored retirement benefits. You know, only about the 26% of today's workers don't have access to any kind of retirement plan.
Yep.
Fewer workers have access to pensions. And even if they have a 401k, many employers are not being generous with their matches, or they may not even have a job at all. And so for all those reasons, that's why two-thirds of the Social Security beneficiaries out there today, two-thirds depend on Social Security for half of their income. And our concern is that statistics only get worse. That seniors are going to depend on Social Security from a much higher degree of their living expenses, and as a result, it needs to be adequate to ensure that people don't live in poverty.
And to me, that's what it's supposed to be. It's an anti-poverty insurance, and make sure that you know, when we have a massive collapse, a massive economic catastrophe like we had in September of 2008, that you don't have the most vulnerable who are the ones who are paying the freight.
Right.
And, you know, you brought up an interesting point that I think needs highlighted. You said payroll taxes. The reality is $110,000 of payroll taxes. Those are people who punch a clock and work and collect a paycheck. Those aren't people who gamble on Wall Street. Those aren't the Mitt Romneys of the world who get most of the vast majority of their income through Wall Street, through capital gains. That's not part of this system.
Right. Well, and that brings up another source of income for the program is that capital gains ought to be taxed for purposes of funding the Social Security Trust Fund. And that's something we've already done with the Medicare program. So, you know, and also there is no cap on the payroll taxes we pay towards Medicare. So why should there be a cap on the payroll taxes we pay towards Social Security? And, you know, there's no reason why, like Medicare, we shouldn't also be taxing capital gains to help finance the Social Security. So everybody has a part in financing this you know, one of the most successful programs in the history of the United States government.
Yeah, you're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Dan Adcock, Director of Government Relations and Policy at the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. We've got a link to their website at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Dan's name. You know, I hear a lot of people tell me, you know, just spew out talking points. And one of the big ones I keep hearing is, you know, back when we first started Social Security, there were like 16 or 20 workers for every person who was collecting a check. And you know, today there are only two people for each one of those retirees. We just can't afford this. How do you respond to something like that? For me, I say, well, what we need are full employment policies, need to get people back to work. But how do you address that?
Well, you know, the thing is that budgets, the way the government spends money, is really a question of priorities. And that's why we elect, you know, our members of Congress to you know, as our representatives, and we as constituents, you know, try to articulate our interests to them. But I think the thing that galls a lot of people is that, you know, when you look at, for instance, the budget that Paul Ryan has put before the House of Representatives both this year and last year, it includes $5 trillion in tax cuts that mainly benefit the wealthy. And these are tax cuts in addition to the Bush tax cuts. You know, the Bush tax cuts benefit people who are millionaires by about $123,000 a year. And this additional change that Congressman Ryan has advocated in these budgets would lower the tax rate from 35 to 25%. And in so doing, it provides an additional $264,000 tax cut to millionaires. So, you know, In the same budget, of course, has the Medicare voucher plan. It also includes fast track authority on an annual basis to force Congress to consider cuts to Social Security. So it's kind of hard to believe that when you look at a package like this, and you see the cuts that are being made to Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, and they're going to pay for this tax cut for the wealthy, you know, it really undermines any kind of argument that seniors and middle-class people should have to make these sacrifices when they've already been making sacrifices during the recession. And what's really going on here is they're being asked to make a sacrifice to pay for these tax cuts for the wealthy.
You know, in bringing that up, I just saw yesterday the meager cost of living adjustment, like 1.7%, I think it was, about 20
right.
bucks, about 20 bucks a month.
Yeah.
And yet I keep hearing people tell me that, well, what the Republicans want is they don't want to cut Social Security benefits. They don't want to do that. They just want to adjust this cost of living formula. You know, so it's to them, it's more fair, and it doesn't increase benefits so much. They just want to, you know, just a little different calculation. What's that? What's with that?
Well, the problem is, you know, the purpose of a cost of living adjustment is to make sure that seniors, who by definition are living on fixed incomes, you know, they're not working anymore. They don't have the ability to work harder to get a raise or a promotion. And so the only thing they have so that they can keep pace with inflation, so they can keep their head above water, are these cost of living adjustments that are provided with Social Security. Because certainly they're not getting a cost of living adjustment out of a 401k plan. And, you know, some pensions do, some pensions don't have cost of living adjustments. But this is the only thing that can help them from paying the disproportionate share of medical costs they have to pay. You know, when you're talking about seniors are paying about 3 to 4 times more out of pocket for their medical expenses than somebody in their 20s or 30s.
Yep.
You know, the problem with the current consumer price index that's used to set COLAs is that it's inadequate for providing the inflation protection that seniors need. So the problem that we're looking at is when the election is over and Congress reconvenes for this lame duck session that's going to start on November 13th and last through Christmas, one of the things that's being seriously considered, and this is what you were talking about, is a proposal called the Chain Consumer Price Index, which supporters of it are trying to pass it off as a technical correction. But what it really does is it reduces the cost of living adjustments that Social Security beneficiaries already receive. So just to give you a short example, if you're 65 years old today and you filed for Social Security back when you were 62, if this chain CPI were to become law, it would mean that your benefits would be cut by $130 a year, and by the time you reach age 95, your benefits would be cut by $1,400.
Wow.
And, you know, again, as people are having to shoulder the increased cost of health care and all the out-of-pocket expenses they have, not just paying a Medicare Part B premium, but also paying for Medigap insurance and paying for whatever this year's increases in home heating oil will be and all the utilities, electric, gas, whatever they have to pay, you know, they're not going to, over time, they're going to be losing ground, and over time, their standard of living is going to go down. So, you know, we think that the alternative to this, the better alternative, is to have a truly accurate measure of inflation, of the kind of inflationary increases that seniors have to pay. And there's something called the Consumer Price Index for the Elderly that the National Committee supports, and would do a better job of helping seniors especially absorb the disproportionate amount of health care costs they have to pay.
Yeah, and it wouldn't take money out of the economy. What bothers me when you start talking about, well, we're going to cut Social Security benefits to folks, that's less money that's in consumers' pockets that they can go into the marketplace and create jobs with.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, we've done a lot of analysis by the Social Security Administration has available by congressional district the amount of not only Social Security beneficiaries within those congressional districts, but also say how much they also explain how much money Social Security benefits come into those congressional districts. And when you're talking about Social Security beneficiaries, and again, you know, the average benefit is about $14,000 a year, these are people that don't sit on this money. They're spending this money. And so when they spend it, they're stimulating the local economy. And when I've looked at the average of how much is spent on in congressional district, it's over $1 billion per congressional district. So you start doing things like cutting benefits, and that's not only is it going to have a direct effect on the people who are retirees, the people also who receive Social Security because they're disabled, widows and widowers, children who are survivors of adults who have passed away. All of a sudden, they're directly affected. But also the local businesses that they patronize are also affected because these people aren't spending as much money any longer, and that has a huge ripple effect on the economy.
Yeah. Last line of questioning I've got for you, because, you know, the point you made there, I think about my grandmother, who, you know, she has a little bit of disposable income. You take that $100 a year, that $1,000 a year down the road away. There's no getting your hair done on Tuesdays. There's no going out to lunch with the girls on Sunday. There's none of that. There's basic survival, and maybe not even that, maybe just cat food. So let me ask you last two real quick questions. You know, we keep hearing that, and Bush did an amazing job in 2005 running around with his filing cabinet saying, you know, all of that debt, this is just IOUs. And what the right's pointing is, this is another ticking bomb. This is a crisis. You know, are they IOUs? What's sitting in those drawers? And is this a ticking bomb?
Well, first off, it's not a ticking bomb.
It's not like NAFTA was thought up out of nowhere.
No. That's now being phased in. From 60 to 67. But, you know, at the end of the day, everybody went into the room and came up with a proposal and saved the program for you know, decades out. And I have no doubt that even with as bad as things are in Congress these days, that at the, you know, that before the projected date when Social Security will no longer be able to pay 100% of benefits, it'll pay 75 cents on the dollar, that the Congress will intervene. And we just hope that it's done in a way that ensures that the program is going to be adequate for people's needs and that benefits are not cut. And we've already talked about how to do that.
Yep.
Now, on the question of when people say that the Social Security Trust Fund is full of IOUs, if that's the case, then why is People's Republic of China investing in the same IOUs? Because what's held in the Social Security Trust Fund are U.S. government securities that have the full faith and credit of the United States government. And they're regarded as the safest form of investment in the world.
Yep.
So for that reason, you know, that's why there's $2.7 trillion in assets today in the Social Security Trust Fund, and that ensures that those securities are there so that when it comes time to pay out benefits, the Social Security benefits, those securities are redeemed for cash, and they're paid out. And there's no Social Security beneficiary has ever been denied their benefits because of the way the system is financed.
Excellent points. Dan Adcock, I appreciate the time, Director of Government Relations and Policy at the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. We've got a link to their website at therickSmithShow.com. Dan, thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Great talking with you. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
We should not be surprised that a magazine named Fortune would be empathetic to the feelings of the 1%. But good grief, how embarrassingly sycophantish are the editors who hustle out a piece just before the presidential election entitled "Stop Beating Up the Rich." Written by Nina Easton, the timing of Fortune's article was less than fortunate, for it came out just as the infamous video surfaced showing Mitt Romney beating up the poor and the middle class, while his audience of fellow multimillionaires laughed, cheered, and shouted encouragement. Despite the timing, Mitt and company undoubtedly appreciated the writer's disdain for those who so insolently dare to criticize and even demonize those worthy ones at the top who, as she explained, gained their wealth through their own efforts. Also, you can almost hear the rich applaud appreciatively as she scorns the divide between the 1% and the rest of us as a, quote, flawed prism marred by hyperbole, half-truths, and unnecessary pessimism about what it means to succeed in America. Passionately deploring diatribes against the 1%, Miss Easton assails critics of America's widening inequality as being people who want to raid the gold pot. On behalf of the pampered rich, she issues her own emotional grito, wailing that critics must stop the name-calling. Does Easton propose any specific remedies for the rising inequality that's shutting out the many? You betcha. And it just happens to be one that's a favorite of Mitt and the Millionaires Club, one that they prescribe for any and all of our nation's economic woes. Corporate tax reform. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's unclear why Fortune felt the need to print this piece of fluff or why Easton got the assignment, but her credit line does mention that her husband is, quote, senior strategist for the Romney campaign. Curious, huh?
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
We don't think of the bottom. We do it for the rich and the deep. Let's go for the lot, but then we'll pay. Hooray! You're a very deep. Be a pirate is our machine. Do a 200 of pirate is free. You are a pirate.
Arr, gonna raid the fund. Arr. Which is what they've been doing for 30 years. I mean, you know, when Reagan and Tip O'Neill set up that big cookie jar, Reagan knew they were going to borrow from it heavily, and they did. They borrowed heavily from Social Security to pay for Star Wars and all of their toys. Figuring, that's just down the road. And, you know, George H.W. Bush did, too, to a small extent. Clinton did. Bush did. You know, it just is what it is. There's that pot there. Oh, well, you know, we can borrow from it, even though it's not by law allowed to add to our debt. But, boy, we've sure done that. And I look at Social Security. Man, this is one of those programs that we're going to need. And I think Dan Adcock pointed it out. Look, as we get older, as each generation gets older, especially my generation, who's pretty much lost the defined benefit. My kids they're not even going to know what a defined benefit pension was. It's not even going to be something they talk about in history, because the private sector has done such a great job of moving towards a plan that they don't have to pay for. And that's really what it's about. It's about shifting responsibility, yes, but also cheating workers out of wages. Because, you know, those defined benefit plans that they were putting money into? Well, that's a pay cut. Understand that. Because that didn't turn into wages into your pocket. No, didn't do that at all. And I look at this, and this is one of those things I'm telling you. This generation should be fighting to keep it and not raising the age to 70 or 80 or wherever the right wants to take it. Leave it the hell alone. Fix the funding mechanisms. But you know what? The right does a masterful job of divide and conquer. And, you know, I look at this article written over at GOP USA. They said from 2001 to 2011, understand the divide and conquer. Understand them telling the younger generation, those in their 20s, that you'll see a UFO before you'll see a Social Security check. Well, GOP USA writes from 2001 to 2011, the median income for all U.S. households fell by 6.6%. when inflation was taken into account, according to census data. But the median income for households headed by someone 65 or older, well, that rose by 13%. Now, they don't bother to mention that the massive collapse in September of 2008 pretty much eviscerated household income. That's something we don't want to talk about. The Bush recessions, all of that had nothing to do with the drop in household income. In fact, we should be cheering this. Because during a time when incomes were falling and buying power and demand is falling, seniors in this country stayed out of poverty. And every one of us, every generation should be looking at it going, hey, look, that program works. And when I get to that age, when I get to my golden years, when I get to the end of the road, I want to have that kind of respect, that kind of dignity, and that kind of security. None of this, oh, you've got your own plan, and if it runs out, tough luck. True security. Let's take a quick break. I'm right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Are you feeling that back-to-school squeeze? Backpacks, clothes, shoes, all the things they have to have because last year's stuff is so last year? If you have a supply shortage, we can help. We know what it's like, and we've got the ultimate hall pass for you. Transfer your high-interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
In 2007, the planet Saturn's large moon Titan was found to have bodies of liquid, lakes, and seas on its surface. In August 2012, NASA passed over an idea to land a craft in the seas of Titan.
Then, in late September 2012, Spanish engineers announced their concept for a boat to sail Titan's seas. They're proposing a mission they call the Titan Lake In-Situ Sampling Propelled Explorer.
or Talus. It would include a boat probe that would land in the middle of a large lake in the north polar region of Titan.
After a successful landing, the boat would move across the lake, propelled by wheels or paddles. It'd head for a nearby coastline on Titan's lake, taking scientific measurements along the way. The engineers suggest the mission would last around 6 months to a year.
A Spanish engineering firm called Grupo Sener and the Centro de Astrobiología in Madrid, Spain, formed a partnership to study the Titan boat concept. They say the mission isn't far past the concept phase at this time.
And by the way, these lakes on Saturn's moon Titan don't contain liquid water. Instead, they contain liquid methane. Exploring them would be exciting. We have more at EarthSky.org. Search for the words Titan boat. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
It is not worth fighting for this man if this is the kind of spokesman he has to respond to an ad like this by citing health care
okay,
in Massachusetts.
Listen, but what we're watching and witnessing here.
No, I'm serious about this.
No, I'm serious.
Not,
I know you're serious.
There's
no I agree
point
with
in
you.
You're doing your show.
I agree with
there's
you.
There's no point in us going to a convention and pushing for this man if he's employing morons like this.
I love that woman. Insanity is appealing, I guess. Welcome back. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, rick@therickSmithShow.com. So last night during the big debate, Mitt Romney came out with the, I want to make sure that we keep our Pell Grant growing, he said. Yes, growing! We're also going to have our loan program so that people are able to afford school. Yet, if you look at the Ryan budget and something that, you know, Romney has signed on to, kind of, they're going to cut Pell Grants for about 1 million college students. And if you look at Romney's white paper on education, titled A Chance for Every Child, he says he would reverse the growth of Pell Grant funding. He goes on to say that a Romney administration would refocus Pell Grants on students that need them the most and place the program on a responsible long-term path that avoids future funding cliffs and last-minute funding patches. And you go, what does that mean? Does that mean you're going to do what the Ryan budget said? Cut it? Cut the program? Is that what we're talking about? And then he made a couple of very interesting statements about the Abigail and John Adams fund that he started. So it got me wondering, you know, how are things in Massachusetts? He said, you know, Massachusetts is number one in education. Because of him, during his tenure, is that true? Which is why I've asked Donnie McGee, a professor at Bristol Community College and a member of the board of directors for the Massachusetts Teachers Association. She's also a vice president with that organization. Donnie, thanks for taking time for me.
You're very welcome. I'm glad to be here to give some input on how Romney performed in Massachusetts.
So last night, you know, he painted himself in a very positive light. Massachusetts, number one in the country in education because of him. One, I guess, first, is that true? And then secondly, is it because of his policies?
Well, I come from the public higher ed sector, and I think so when he's talking K through 12, we have a very good record in Massachusetts in terms of our test scores and our achievements for our K-12 students, but most people will agree, education policy people and even legislators will know that he cut funding in Massachusetts, and these things were in place long before he, you know, our educational standards were in place in K-12 long before he was involved with Massachusetts government. When I look at what he did for us in higher ed, and I look at how, you know, what he did also with early childhood education, he was not in any way interested in supporting that or expanding that, and he slashed funding to special education by $2.3 million. So sometimes the effects of that don't play out right away. Fortunately for us, he was not in leadership in Massachusetts long enough to perhaps injure our or affect our education policy and the results of how students performed
Yeah. Yeah, if you listen to him last night, boy, he saved the system. He saved your whole state from collapse. You know, all of the jobs he created, because he's a job creator, he's told us over and over again. And, you know, the number one in education, and also this John and Abigail Adams scholarship program, I'm assuming was his birth, correct?
Well, it was, but, you know, interestingly, the Adams scholarship program only focused on, the tuition costs for the people that were going to benefit from it. And tuition is very, very much a small part of what education costs are in general. We have fees that students pay, which are sometimes four and five times what the college tuition is. Matter of fact, when Romney was in leadership here in Massachusetts, he was trying to streamline government and sort of run it like a business, figuring he could cut places like higher education. He cut it so substantially that student fees went up 63%.
And yeah, but he didn't raise taxes.
It was really a tax on those who could least afford it. And it was also hard for educators, too, because they struggled under this this time during which enrollment was skyrocketing and support for higher ed was plummeting. It was sort of an inverse, perverse correlation, if you will. Where I teach at Bristol Community College, 25% increase in student enrollment took place while a corresponding nearly 25% decrease in state support. And this really hurt students. It cut back on student support services, advising, counseling, early intervention programs. We had women's centers closing down. We had a lot of fallout from this, the severe cuts to higher education.
I mean, because
and
when he laid it out,
that's really the last bastion of hope for students,
yeah,
who live in our gateway cities and who can't afford to go to a private school.
Yeah, but when I listen to him lay out his, you know, this John and Abigail and John Adams scholarship, it sounded like a good idea. You know, the top 25% of the school districts get their tuition paid. They can go to the schools in state there. Sounded like a good idea. Kind of the idea of a meritocracy. But yet, the more I read about it, the more it really hasn't panned out because, as you pointed out, the fees, all the other costs associated, you're talking about people who unfortunately can't afford even that, and then you're talking about cutting funding simultaneously, so you're setting up the system for failure.
No, absolutely, and it's really elitism, if you will, because I don't even think the governor understands what our students here in Massachusetts and across the nation, if he were to become president, that they can't afford to borrow from their parents, and they can't, they're often working 20, 30 hours a week to just survive,
yeah,
in addition to going to school and studying. So any increase in fees, and a decline in services sets them up for failure.
Yeah, you know, and I look at this, and, you know, you look at it, we just passed $1 trillion in student loan debt. And to me, you know, what we've done to this generation of college students is just downright criminal. You talk about redistribution of wealth. What we've done is we've taken money that we used to fund higher ed with, and we've said, here, student, if you want that key to the middle class, because we've sold the last couple of generations on the idea that the only way you're getting to the middle class is to get that college education, because we've shipped our manufacturing jobs overseas, and they've taken on this massive amount of debts while you've got the Romneys and the Ryans and all these Republicans and a lot of Democrats, too, going, more tax cuts for the wealthy, more tax cuts for people who don't really need it at the expense of students.
No, it's absolutely true. And what is even worse is that sometimes the financial aid is used up by the time they have either had made poor decisions on what courses they should take, or because they come to our community colleges, for example, and need to take other classes to get them ready to take their program classes. sometimes they end up with a ticket to nowhere and a mountain of debt besides. So it's a failure. And it's, you know, it's the only way that we can keep our students and fuel the economy and create an educated citizenry. We need to have affordable, accessible public higher education. And Governor Romney was not in any way a friend of to our colleges and our universities, and he wasn't accessible.
Yeah.
He ran policy by press conference. He never talked to the practitioners. He didn't even meet with the president of our Massachusetts Teacher Association, which, you know, is the guru for our, you know, 100,000-plus members. He didn't really care about trying to work with others to solve problems. He had a sense he knew what he thought should happen, and he did things largely in isolation.
Yeah, I listened to some of the commentary last night about the debate, and one of the commentators said, well, you know, Romney should be given credit for working with those Democrats. And I go, well, what about the Democrats that worked with him?
Right.
Not a two-way street.
On the Romney care, if you will, there was a lot of working together with the Senate and the House. But beyond that, I think that was the only time we really saw him working with the legislators. And I think they too will say that he was not really integrated with what was going on. The last year and a half, he was out politicking for his next
Senate run
position.
Yeah.
You know, he was out of the state most of the time.
Yeah. You know, someone told me recently that he had his own private elevator installed so that he could in the state house there, so that he could have access, you know, to wherever he wanted to go without having to deal with people.
Well, this is true. Matter of fact, I made the mistake that I was doing a lot of grassroots organizing at the time, trying to get people to go talk to legislators to say, fund our colleges and have the governor fund our contract, which he refused to do. And when I got into the state house, I didn't know my way around, so I walked right into his elevator, uh-oh, not realizing that I had gone by some cordoned velvet ropes that I was not supposed to step around, and got into an elevator that was quite glitzy, much nicer than your average elevator. I knew I wasn't in Kansas anymore, and sure enough, I got escorted off, and I wasn't going to stay there either. So I wasn't allowed to use that elevator, but I think it's well known in the state house that this was his way to come and go, and it was pretty exclusive.
Yeah, you don't want to deal with the rabble. What's it with him and his elevators? I mean, now he's got this, the subterranean car elevator?
Well, yeah, I don't know, but he didn't mix with the people. We followed him. We had a 3-year sort of journey trying to find out where was Mitt Romney going to appear next, so we could talk to him and say what's up with the promises that you're supposed to be keeping in terms of supporting our colleges and supporting our educators. And we would try to chase him down, but we knew we couldn't use the elevator to follow him.
Yeah, playing your own game of where's Willard. Last line of questioning I've got for you. And as a college professor, you deal with the generation that's really, I think, getting screwed in all of this. Did they see how badly they're being set up? Did they see what's right in front of them? I mean, are they being swayed by what Romney's saying on education? Are they seeing?
You know, interesting because, I'm a community college graduate myself. I'm a product of public higher education. So, as are my four sons, and they, I try to talk to them about the relationship between what they're doing now and the politics that are going on out there. I teach literature classes, but there's always politics in literature as well. And, you know, I say, are you listening? Have you, you know, what do you think? This is your life. You've got to make these choices. And I think what is sometimes frustrating, and it's not just with students, they're so caught up in trying to make ends meet, trying to make it to class, trying to make it through the treadmill of work and home and studying and getting ahead. But I have to say that I think they are listening. And I say, you know, there is a clear choice, and you need to choose the one that's going to serve your best interest and understand that public higher education is at some point not going to be free if you don't speak up. In Massachusetts right now, public higher education is pretty much 80% being supported by something other than the state. The state is only giving us 20% support generally across the spectrum of community colleges and universities, and the rest is coming from grants and other places.
Students.
And if Romney had his way, he'd privatize it all.
Yeah, same thing here in Pennsylvania, the state system of higher education. You know, they told me back in 1982, two-thirds of the cost was picked up by the state, the other third with tuition. Right now, three-quarters of the cost of higher ed in the state are picked up by tuition.
So you're struggling with...
Yeah, it's the same kind of redistribution. It's the same right-wing attack. It's the same privatization, just in a different state. It's all across this country. Donnie McGee, I appreciate the time. I appreciate your thoughts, your inputs. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Good luck in Pennsylvania.
Thanks so much. Good, you too.
Bye.
Quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record-keeping, and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller, CPA, and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you, too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check him out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com. And take the worry out of tax time.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at ganleylaw.com.
Exposing
GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the way it is. Everything's raisin, but the way it is. Gasoline, groceries, and our haces. Everything's raisin, but the way it is.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. Huge win for taxpayers here in the state. Huge win for folks who believe public education is a right, something that we should preserve, something we should protect, strengthen. Well, Republicans in the House could not get their ideological charter school bill rammed through. In fact, the governor, very disappointed. It was one of his top priorities. They couldn't get it through the House. They couldn't twist enough arms, according to the governor's spokesman. Yeah, he's disappointed. I mean, it is his top priority. You know, he got his drilling stuff. Now he wants to destroy education. According to House Speaker Sam Smith, the Republican from Jefferson County, he said, well, there was just so many moving parts, couldn't build consensus to get her done. No, I think it was just a bad bill. It was horrible on so many levels. But understand, it's not going away. House Majority Whip Stan Saylor, the Republican from York, said expected to return in the next session. It's going to come back next year. This stuff doesn't go away. The money, the interest, no matter how hard we fight these things back, no matter how many times you slay the dragon, it keeps rearing its ugly head. House Majority Leader Mike Turdzai, well, he wouldn't answer any questions. And you wonder why.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Yeah, still licking his wounds over that one. But you look at this, and like I said, you slay these dragons time and time again, and they just keep coming back with more money. And there's part of me that goes, they didn't pass this because, well, this cow hasn't been milked enough. This cash cow hasn't been milked quite enough. Now, what we need to be doing is we need to be killing this thing dead. We need to make sure that there is sound oversight, that there is local control. None of this stuff of consolidating charter school operations. Because what they want, really, honestly, truthfully, what they really are looking for, and know this, they want corporate control. You know how we have 500 individual school districts around this Commonwealth? They want one. They want one corporate overlord who oversees it all. This is the game plan. This is the big picture. The big picture is they don't want you and me. They don't want the rabble running what goes on. They don't believe we're capable of that. What they want is they want their one corporate board who sit in their smoke-filled room that nobody's allowed access to, and they dictate. And good luck complaining, because it's not government. You can complain to government. You can go protest. And you can picket. You can have rallies at the Capitol, and you can do all of that stuff. And you can call your congressman or your representative and call them every name under the sun, and I'll vote you out, and I'll do this. And there's nothing that can be. They're not going to come and arrest you. They're not going to. None of that. You try that with a for-profit corporation. You try that with one of these big corporations. You will find yourself on the other side of the bars at the Gray Bar Hotel. Because you can go to your government to redress your grievances. Good luck going to a private for-profit corporation. And that's what we're doing. You know, I was at the supermarket the other day, and of course they asked for that stupid card. Do you have your bonus card? And I have one. It's not my real address or my real name, but I have one. So I go, yeah, here you go. And she goes, wow, this is wonderful. We have our little card. And I go, you know, it's amazing how much we're willing to give away our information, give away our freedom to private corporations for tokens or for a percentage off or free or, 10 cents off of gas if I spend $100. But boy, if government were to ask for that kind of stuff, there would be outrage. There would be moneyed interest. That government, no good for nothing. But yet we seem to not have a concern about how much private for-profit corporations know and how much they control of us. And this is another one of those things. You mark my word. Mark it on the calendar. I'm telling you, this is where it's going. We're moving, you know, and for all those people, oh, I don't want to consolidate school districts. There's going to be one. Understand that. One. One corporate board. One bloated bunch of CEOs and folks who will, making sure that their little pockets are full. And at what expense? But Rick, that would be like socialism. Yeah, it would be like socialism if we did that for ourselves. If we had the, like they keep telling us, well, the federal government, they're bearing down on our local control. Which I'm not a huge fan of No Child Left Behind. The testing regime, not a good idea in my estimation. But what they're doing now is exactly that. They are consolidating control. And they're going to do it. This bill was, you know, they would do it with oversight. Of they'd have a state panel that they'd come up with, of course, filled with corporate types, with people friendly to charter schools. It's a game, man. And we had better wake up. Think this stuff through. Think down the road. Where is this leading us? This is a chess game. This isn't checkers. This is chess. You got to think a couple of heads moves ahead because they have. They know the end game. They know the result. They know what they're looking for. The millionaires and billionaires in this country do not spend money that they know they're not going to get back. Like I said earlier, for every dollar they spend on lobbying, they get 220 back. How do I get that kind of return on my money? How do you get it on your investments? Well, they know. They can take our tax dollars. I'm telling you, don't be ripped off. Don't allow it to happen. Which is why we need to be organizing now for when these charter schools come into every other school district in the Commonwealth. Right now, they've just in poor areas. Well, we're going to help those poor people. Yeah, by screwing the taxpayer. But tonight, a victory. It was shot down, but rest assured, it will be back, which is why you need to stay on your representatives. You need to stay on this issue, and we will. We're going to take a quick break. Back with the third hour of the program. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show.
Leaders for involvement, 3,000 people screaming out,
where's our government?
Lawsuits and arraignments, members under company surveillance, public divided into their lovers, all they hate are billions off our back, and it's still not enough, they should have spoken to a cap,
that we never give up,
we'll be here one day longer, the people's voice is stronger,
the people's voice is stronger,
we work hard for our money, we will walk with respect, keep fighting for these fights for generations and next, one day longer.
Radio experience where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Senator Dick Durbin visited Bainport Tuesday. Jesse Russell reports.
Workers in Freeport, Illinois, continued their encampment and blockade outside of a Sensata factory. Dubbed Bainport, the workers are asking Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney to ask Bain Capital to reconsider moving their jobs to China. Romney is a 51% shareholder in Bain, which he helped found in the early 80s. On Tuesday, the workers were visited by Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, telling the workers there is a solution to help stop the flow of jobs from the U.S. to China, waiting in Washington.
We could pass the Bring Jobs Home to America Act. It's an important bill. It's an important bill. 6 years ago, I introduced it. Last two or three years, it's been Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan. Michigan knows this story pretty well. And here's what it says. If you're going to create a tax code, your tax code ought to have the right values in it.
Durbin said it's time to start rewarding companies that choose to stay on American soil and create American jobs.
Companies that believe in this country, believe in our workers, believe in our families, will give you the tax break to stay in America.
More than 25,000 activists on RootsAction.org are demanding President Obama and Congress commit to not cutting a dime
from Social Security and Medicare. The activists say so far 29 U.S. senators have committed not to cut Social Security. Obama so far has refused to commit to not cutting Social Security and Medicare. In fact, he's willing to accept cuts to both programs. A strong majority of Americans, though, oppose making any cuts to those two programs. Social Security is fully funded for many years to come. Removing the cap on payroll taxes for the wealthiest could guarantee Social Security funding with no cuts in benefits. Senator Bernie Sanders has introduced legislation to do that. Both Social Security and Medicare could be fully funded and even expanded without cutting any benefits if politicians decide to represent the will of the American people on those issues. The National Union of Healthcare Workers is suing SEIU, alleging assault and battery by SEIU UHW union stewards. The suit charges that on July 20th, over two dozen SEIU UHW stewards surrounded NUHW representative Gloria Watkins. The suit says they chanted and clapped in a hostile manner and then verbally and physically attacked Watkins with repeated elbow strikes to her torso. NUHW is trying to get SEIU members at Kaiser Permanente to leave SEIU and join the NUHW. NUHW says as the two unions compete for members, SEIU is allegedly engaging in a pattern of bullying. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
John, there's a real difference between venture capitalism and vulture capitalism. The fact of the matter is that he's going to have to face up to this at some time or another.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
And welcome back to the third hour of the Rick Smith Show. You got to wonder how Mittens' ring of fire is feeling tonight after the reaming he took last night. And I got to be honest with you, it's about time that Obama hit him over how he made his money. Look, it's not illegal, but it's no way to run the country. And, you know, about time, you know, the guy stood up for himself and went after Romney and Bain and all of the rhetoric that we've been hearing. Some good news for hockey fans, though. You'll be happy. You'll be pleased to know that soon you will be able to be bamboozled and schnookered just like the working-class Republicans in this country. That's right. Frank Luntz, the linguistic genius, the master manipulator, the guy who brought us death tax. He's been hired by the NHL to make the NHL look good after they kicked their players to the curb, locked them out. I guess it is all about marketing. Yeah, we kick people to the curb, but they were asking for it. Yeah, I think I've heard that somewhere before. Anyway, and talking about sports, I saw a story that just my mind wanted to explode, which is why I had to get Travis Waldron, the reporter over at Think Progress, who wrote a great piece over at Think Progress about this injustice, Well, it's a ripoff is what it is. Travis, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So Republican Senator Tom Coburn has pointed out that we're giving, what, $91 million at least to the NFL, to the NHL, to the PGA, because they're nonprofits? What, I didn't know anything. What is this?
Well, basically what Tom Coburn pointed out, he publishes this report every year about wasteful government spending. Some of it is wasteful, truly wasteful. Some of it is wasteful in Tom Coburn's eyes and probably very valuable to some other people out there. But one of the things he pointed out that I thought was really interesting is that the National Football League, the National Hockey League, the Professional Golfers Association, a couple of small sports leagues, I think he pointed out the Major League Lacrosse League out there, classify themselves as nonprofit organizations, essentially as charities. And by doing that, and by saying that their mission is things like perpetuating hockey in the United States and Canada, which is how the NHL phrases it, that they don't have to pay taxes on their profits, the same way that any other charitable organization doesn't, is tax exempt. And ultimately, that costs the United States government about $91 million a year, according to Coburn's report.
How is that possible? How is it possible that you look at, and I remember when the Browns left Cleveland, it was all about the money. It was how much money Modell wanted to put into his pocket through parking, through concessions, through the sky boxes. How is it possible that anyone could make a justification that the NFL is not a for-profit industry?
Well, it's possible because I think the way the NFL would argue it, and the way that these leagues would argue it, is that the teams themselves are not necessarily nonprofit entities, but the league itself, the league, the the umbrella under which these teams operate is a nonprofit, because their mission is to foster an environment for these places to be and to promote the sport and to, you know, do all these other things. They donate to charities. They do things like that. And they argue that because they do that, because the NFL itself does not exist solely to make money, but because its underlings, I guess, exist to make money, that they would classify as a nonprofit organization, a charity of sorts. It's an argument that doesn't make sense on its face, but it's used by a lot of these organizations to get away with not paying taxes.
I got to be honest. When I hear charity, when I hear you're operating as a charity, I think that you're actually out there doing something for the public good, helping people. You know, the local soup kitchen, the local food bank. Those are charities in my mind. The National Football League, for all of the good work that it does and it makes players go do stuff. I'm sorry, it's the Football League. That's the business.
Right, and they, you know, the thing is, and one of the other ones is the NCAA does this as well, which there's a much more justifiable argument because of the educational purposes of the member institutions. But the interesting one to look at within the NCAA's purview is the college football bowl games that are all classified this way, or not all of them are, but a large portion of them are classified this way. And they do the same thing that the NFL and the NHL do. They pay out these massive salaries to executives that run the bowl games, or, you know, Roger Goodell, who's I saw a report yesterday, may make $20 million or $12 million, I'm sorry, by the end of this year. And Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, here he is locking out players, as you said, and he's set to haul in around $8 million this year, according to some reports. It seems kind of out of line, again, like you said, with what we classify as charities, and that would be that's Coburn's argument against it, is, you know, this is essentially a little bit of a bait and switch that these organizations, which exist to make profits for their members, to make profits for the people who work for them, and frankly, make a lot of money, are then just existing as charities.
So what's Coburn going to do about it? I mean, he's pointed out we're getting screwed $91 million a year, which isn't a whole lot of money, but it's still, we could be putting that towards education or build a road or a bridge or something instead of putting more money into the pockets of the billionaire class as we're doing. What's he proposing to do about it?
Well, I think he's talked about comprehensive tax reform, which is, you know, everybody's favorite three-word phrase in Washington. Whether or not there's anything serious to do about it, I don't know. It would take I don't think this is a big enough problem that people are going to start attacking it in Congress tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I think it's something that if we ever do get to this idea of tax reform, that Tom Coburn would probably be a staunch advocate for doing something about.
Yeah, is this one of those things like Mitt Romney was talking about? We need to have all these things for taxes so that the country will be attractive, so people will want to come to America again. You know, free handouts, free money.
Yeah, I you know, this one's hard because the NFL obviously has, you know, all of these leagues have their own lobbyists in Washington, and you know, there are all sorts of tax loopholes, as you know, that exist because there were people who wanted the tax loophole, and there were people who were willing to give it to them.
Yeah, and the reason I bring this up is it's interesting to me that Coburn, you know, will point out this $91 million, which to me I think this is just another, like you pointed out, a loophole, something that they lobbied for, a little sweetheart, little sweetener on the side. Not an awful lot of money, but still $91 million is a lot of money. But I look at, you know, something that I haven't heard the Republicans talk about at all, which is all of the money that we've allowed to be accumulated overseas and that we don't get tax dollars on until it gets to such a point where they say, oh, we want to repatriate it. And I look at the thing that Romney's been pushing for, this territorial tax, which a lot of people think are going to cost us, what, 800,000, a million jobs. As soon as he passes this thing, as these jobs flood out of the country because, well, the profits can come back. I don't hear anybody on the right talking about that.
Yeah, that's the problem. Citizens for Tax Justice released a report today highlighting how much money the Fortune 500 corporations have sitting overseas and what their tax rates are and what they would pay if they repatriated it repatriation rate, when you bring the money from overseas back, is 35%. They analyzed 47 companies that do disclose what they pay in taxes. They found that a vast majority of them pay a very little amount. The top 10 that they analyzed, or the top 10 offshorers, I guess you could call them, that they analyzed would all pay at least 32%, which means none of them have paid more than 3% in foreign taxes on these profits. So as the report highlighted, it's very likely that they're stashing this money in places like the Cayman Islands that don't tax these profits at all. And, you know, in fact, if the average tax burden of these companies was added to the other 235 that don't disclose that they analyze, you're looking at upwards of $480 billion a year. I mean, that's a lot of money for us to be letting just sit over there. That doesn't get taxed. It doesn't get put back into our economy. It doesn't even get put back into other economies. It's not like it's benefiting people in other countries, because most of it is probably just sitting there.
Yeah. So let me ask you this then, you know, in looking at all of this money, and the number that I saw was $1.5 trillion that are sitting in other countries that, you know, the Republicans love to say, well, if we could just bring that money back, we'd put it to work, we'd create jobs. And it sounds attractive. It sounds rational. It sounds reasonable. But we've seen this movie before, I think, back during the Bush years, and it didn't quite work. What's to say it
right.
will work? What's to say it will work if we do it again?
Well, it won't. I mean, this is the entire Republican tax argument by Mitt Romney. You know, you cut taxes on the rich. We tried that during the Bush years. It didn't work. You do, big corporate tax reform. It's not going to work. You do a repatriation tax. We tried that in 2004. It was Bush's argument that we were going to bring all this money back home by lowering the tax rate temporarily on these corporations that have all this money overseas. And what we found out, and what, incidentally, a former advisor on Bush's Council of Economic Advisors has admitted, is that it didn't work. What happened is most of these companies brought the money back and used it to buy back shares or to pay out dividends, not to create jobs. In fact, a lot of them actually cut jobs in the immediate aftermath. And what happened, again, after this, is they stored more money offshore in hopes that Congress would come back and give them this sweetheart deal again in the future. And this is something Republicans in Congress argued for from leadership, Eric Cantor, all the way down the line when the Republican presidential primary was going on. Rick Perry argued for this. Michelle Bachmann argued for it. Mitt Romney argued for it. Almost every one of the Republican candidates had some proposal for a repatriation holiday. And it's just another one of those tax plans that just doesn't work. And we have plenty of evidence that it doesn't.
Yeah, but I look at this and, you know, I keep hearing, oh, we can't invest in roads and bridges. We can't send kids to college and help pay for that. We can't get health care. We can't do a lot of things. We're broke. I keep hearing this all the time. And I wonder, what would our debt look like? What would our deficits look like if we actually taxed these companies appropriately and they actually had to pay their tax bill? What would it look like if, you know, the Romneys of the world actually had to pay their taxes, instead of having all of these loopholes and all of these avoidance tactics? What if we actually held them accountable? I wonder what our debt and deficits would look like then.
I can't tell you a specific number on the debt or deficit, but I will tell you that President Obama proposed a different type of corporate tax reform than Mitt Romney's earlier this year in the State of the Union address, actually. He proposed it was a lowering of the top rate in the corporate tax, but it was also coupled with several other proposals, including a minimum global tax that would have changed the way these companies were taxed on offshore profits. Multiple analyses of that plan found that depending on what baseline you would use, you would raise somewhere between $200 and $300 billion a year. That's a significant amount of money. That we're letting just sit over there. That's not as much as what CTJ found, but their analysis wasn't complete, obviously. It was based on some assumptions. But that's still a lot of money that could be put to use over here. And instead, we get arguments from Mitt Romney like we need to keep lowering the corporate tax rate, because he says he uses this canard that we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. That's true. The problem is that no one pays it.
No, I mean, it's like Pennsylvania. They keep saying we have the highest tax rate, one of the highest tax rates in the country, yet 71% of the companies here in the state pay no corporate net income tax. So, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, if you've got the highest tax and nobody pays it, do you have the highest tax?
Right. I mean, we have one of the lowest, if not the lowest, effective corporate tax rates in the developed world. We get such a small percentage of our GDP in tax revenues from corporations every year. And I think it was Warren Buffett who said back when this debate was going on or earlier this year or last year that essentially if you're a corporation that's eligible for the 35% tax rate, if your profits are that high and you're actually paying 35% in taxes, you should probably fire your accountant.
Yeah.
Because you're not doing a very good job of finding all of the ways around the tax code. And I mean, you look at corporations like Apple and Microsoft that are billions of dollars in taxes each year that they avoid by going through Ireland and the Cayman Islands and different countries that have, that allow them to run their profits through it. And it's just like you said, I mean, this is money we could be putting into healthcare, money we could be putting into infrastructure and education, any of the number of programs that are short funded right now.
So if, are you buying the Romney argument that we lower the tax rate and we do what they've done in 86 and you do what they did during the Kennedy years, we're going to lower that tax rate, cut the loopholes, and that's going to bring in more money? Because my thought on this is we've seen that movie before. Sure, in 86 they did lower the rate and they did cut the loopholes, but you know what? The very next day, the lobbyists were back going, hey, we need the loopholes again, and politicians love giving out special interests because it brings in campaign dollars. So you're seeing the rate go down, and we're going to be back right here in 10, 15, probably 5 years.
Right. Well, I think there's two interesting points about the argument that Republicans make about the Jack Kennedy years and the 1986 tax reform plan. The first is that the top marginal rate when Jack Kennedy cut taxes was up around 90%. So we're having a much different argument now when our top marginal income tax rate is 35% than we were when Jack Kennedy cut taxes. The second is, in 1986, when Ronald Reagan cut taxes, he did indeed cut taxes for the rich, but his plan got a lot closer to paying for itself and working out mathematically, which Romney's doesn't, because he equalized investment taxes. So if you were making a lot of your income on capital gains, you were paying the same rate you were paying on income, and that's not the case in Romney's plan. In fact, it's the capital gains tax right now is at 15%, which is why people like Mitt Romney, who don't earn wages, very much in wages each year, end up paying such a low rate. It's because we incentivize these investment taxes. You'll see various arguments out there for investment taxes getting some sort of preference, but it doesn't need to be 20 percentage points lower. And this idea that, you know, just lowering the rates for the rich again is going to spur growth. Once again, if you were alive from 2000 for the last 12 years, if you lived through the Bush years, and you buy that argument, I don't know what to say to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've been bamboozled, and it's the blind faith that we see from, especially from my Republican friends. And, you know, the thing that gets me is, you know, you go back to you brought up the Reagan, how he balanced the numbers. How he also balanced the numbers was taking away a lot of middle class loopholes, the interest deduction that you paid on a car loan or credit cards that you used to be able to deduct. And also he taxed unemployment benefits. Another slap in the face for working people. And the capital gains thing to me is we're rewarding gambling while punishing and penalizing work.
Right. And I think, you know, you look at Mitt Romney's tax proposal and the math isn't there. We know that. I mean, I don't think there's anyone outside of the Romney campaign that actually believes that the math can work anymore. Even two of his advisors have essentially admitted that it can't. If he's serious about passing this plan and not adding to the deficit, which I don't think he is, but let's assume that he is serious about not adding to the deficit, there's simply no way to do that without raising taxes on the middle class through closing more of the loopholes that they benefit, whether it's ending the child tax credit, whether it's curbing the earned income tax credit, whether it's ending tax credits to go to help people go to college, or the home mortgage interest deduction, or the health care credit. I mean, all of these things that are beneficial to the middle class, and to make it clear, that have long been supported by Republicans as a way to reduce the number of people paying income taxes. George W. Bush passed one of the biggest expansions of the child tax credit that we've ever had because it was viewed as a pro-family policy to help people, help working families. This idea that you're going to be able to pass these massive tax cuts to the rich without ending some of those tax credits and without hitting the middle class is false.
Yep. And but again, you know, I think we saw last night during the debate, Romney's going to say anything that he thinks it's going to take, and it doesn't matter what he said in the past. It doesn't matter the positions of the past. You know, I look at his statement on coal. You know, he was the guy who said, we need to shut this down because it's killing people, and now he's the big coal lover. Just really a very strange, strange guy. We'll see where this takes us. Travis, it was great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
You too. Thanks for having me.
All right, Travis Waldron, reporter over at Think Progress. ThinkProgress.org, the website. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
And take your money, all they want to do is and take your money, all they want to do is and take your money, all they
want to
do is
and take your money. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We should not be surprised that a magazine named Fortune would be empathetic to the feelings of the 1%. But good grief, how embarrassingly sycophantish are the editors who hustle out a piece just before the presidential election entitled, Stop Beating Up the Rich. Written by Nina Easton, the timing of Fortune's article was less than fortunate, for it came out just as the infamous video surfaced showing Mitt Romney beating up the poor in the middle class, while his audience of fellow multimillionaires laughed, cheered, and shouted encouragement. Despite the timing, Mitt and company undoubtedly appreciated the writer's disdain for those who so insolently dare to criticize and even demonize those worthy ones at the top who, as she explained, gain their wealth through their own efforts. Also, you can almost hear the rich applaud appreciatively as she scorns the divide between the 1% and the rest of us as a, quote, flawed prism marred by hyperbole, half-truths, and unnecessary pessimism about what it means to succeed in America. Passionately deploring diatribes against the 1%, Miss Easton assails critics of America's widening inequality as being people who want to raid the gold pot. On behalf of the pampered rich, she issues her own emotional grito, wailing that critics must stop the name-calling. Does Easton propose any specific remedies for the rising inequality that...
Remind us next week how it is possible. All y'all rock. By the way, Bob, your Tennessee accent pretty much sucks. However, your proofreading is stellar. Rainbows here on the Front Range. Go big orange up there on the hill. Thank you, Kate. Ron and Raleigh noting, you know as well as I do, Bob, that frat boys would never do crazy shit
with that package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 30 is the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
We took a concerted effort to go out and find women who had backgrounds that could be qualified to become members of our cabinet. I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women.
Binders, binders, all of women.
pay. You kidding? Equal pay for women? No, no. In fact, you know that woman last night who brought it up? How dare she? The conservative publication Free Beacon, not very happy with her, not happy with the 24-year-old. In fact, went after her. Nice little smear article, you know, because how dare she ask a question that, well, might actually affect the pre-kindergarten teacher? Because, you know, who knows? Maybe she would like to make a decent living so she wouldn't have to depend on a man because, you know, she's got to run home and make dinner, right? Right? At least that's what Mitten said last night. Wow. The Internet's nuts. Let's go to Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service, get her post-debate thoughts. Victoria, thanks for taking time for me.
Let me just climb out of my binder here.
Why aren't you home making dinner?
I already had dinner. I already had dinner, made dinner, did the chores, did the dishes, did everything.
Well, you know, like my wife said, you know, women are super beings. We do it all.
Do it all.
And, you know, at a certain point, we don't need men. And, you know, maybe that's where we're heading. We're making ourselves obsolete.
After last night's caper, increasingly, we think we don't need men.
I mean, was he trying? And, you know, I guess the argument that if I'm going to defend him, which I can't believe I'm going to, but the argument that I could make, or I'll try to make, in his defense would be that he was trying to identify that maybe, possibly, he's trying to understand, even though we all know he doesn't. Not going
I don't
there.
Follow that argument, really. That's why you heard that silence from me there. That was me thinking.
Well, I mean that he understands what women are going through. He understands how tough it is, you know, to need flexibility to be able to get home and make their man some dinner. No.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess it wasn't a very good defense then. So, what did you think? I mean, what did you think of last night's debate?
I thought Obama was back. I thought he was very good. I thought he took a little bit of time to warm up. I thought that he was a little angry at the beginning. I mean, the fact is these two guys can't stand each other, and it comes through.
Nor should they.
And I thought that Obama got his groove back. At a certain point, and I can't pinpoint it exactly, but at a certain point it almost seemed as though he realized that he got under Romney's skin, and he started to sort of grin a bit. And when he started to grin, you got the impression, oh, he's settling down. He's starting to have a good time now.
Yeah.
Once he started to have a good time, it really seemed to gel together for him.
Yeah, for me, it was that moment where there was a second where I really thought that Obama was going to turn around and slug him. And it was over the Libya thing. Because, you know, look, all the other stuff you can bicker about, but that, I think to him is, it would be to me extremely personal if one of my people that I put in a place like that ended up getting killed, something very personal, and to be questioned and to politicize that, I think I would have slugged it, which is why I'm not running for president.
Yeah, I mean, the way he said proceed, Governor, was like so interesting.
So let me ask you on the Benghazi thing. Was Candy Crowley wrong? I mean, you know, the rights, you know, she shouldn't have butted in and facts be damned and all of that.
Well, you know, in a way, it was unusual for somebody, for a moderator to say, you know, he did say that. But I can understand why she did it at that point, because it was turning into a did not did so moment.
Yeah.
And somebody almost had to put a stop to it.
Yeah, I thought she did an all right job. I mean, the questions, you know, as I was looking at the questions, and the right wing went nuts over the questions, not happy. Oh, this was all staged. I heard it all today. The questions
I mean,
are from people.
You know, what was wrong with the questions? These were reasonable questions from undecided voters. Some of the questions I wasn't happy about. Some of the questions I preferred. I mean, they were a mixture of questions.
Oh, that one about equal pay for women. That's a plant. I had two people tell me that today. It's a plant. No, that was a 24-year-old woman who's not being able to make ends meet. And the only way she's getting health care is because Obamacare allows her to stay on her parents' health care. So that's how she's making ends meet.
I see. And okay.
She'd like to be able to make a decent paycheck of her own. That's all. I understand why she asked it.
Yeah, and this is a bad thing, I suppose.
Yes, it's horrible.
Okay, because, I get you.
Well, because it put Romney on the defensive. You got to understand who my friends are. They're all a bunch of right-wing
right.
lunatics who, you know, for one reason or another, they've bought into the drumbeat.
Well, the Libya question put Obama on the defense. I mean, there were several questions that put Obama on the defense.
Yeah. But
several questions that put Obama on the defense. Didn't these people you spoke to think that he was put on the defense at some point?
No.
Oh, no.
It was,
okay.
It was all, you know, it was that communist news network woman.
Sorry. Oh, okay.
She knew all the questions. And I'd go, yeah, she did, but they didn't.
Yes, she did know all the questions because she went through the questions.
And she said at the beginning, and to be honest, and I did joke with one of my friends that, you know, if those were the questions that they chose, I would love to see the ones that they chose not to use.
Yes, true.
Is there a way of getting a copy of that? Any way to, you know, to find that?
No. No way at all. That's gone out into the ether and it's disappeared. It no longer exists.
All right. So, and I know you do an awful lot of these hits across the country. What are the righties telling you? How did they see it? Because a lot of my righty friends think, you know, Romney did great.
I have to tell you, you're the first station I've spoken to today.
Okay, good. Well, then that is a good thing. Evidently, big news in New York. We have foiled a plot to blow up the Federal Reserve.
Yes, one of these brainiacs, it seems. Now, of course, this is all according to the prosecutor, you know, because that's all you hear when you hear about an arrest.
Right.
But this is a guy who came to the U.S., according to the arrest, in January to, you know, do some blowing up. And he decided to carry out a terrorist attack, and he tried to recruit some other people to form a cell. And one of the people he tried to enlist was an FBI informant. So then the FBI and the New York Police Department became involved in the investigation. They monitored this man, this Bangladeshi native, Mr. Nafis, and he began to implement his plan. And his plan was to blow up the New York Fed. And he wrote out a statement to so that is a bit damning, actually,
yeah,
if he did do that.
That's a
bit awkward. To claim responsibility for the attack on the New York Fed, in which he stated he wanted to carry it out on behalf of Al-Qaeda with the desire to destroy America by targeting the nation's economy. The problem was that the 1,000-pound bomb inside a van parked at the New York Fed on Liberty Street wasn't.
Yeah, well, and I don't know that would have blown up the Fed, but and would it have really brought our economy crumbling down? I mean, I know a lot of right-wingers would be thrilled to see the Fed blown up.
There are many people would have been thrilled to see the Fed blown up. It wouldn't have brought the economy down. It might have determined the results of the election.
Yeah, well, good point there. The question, when I first saw the story, the question I have is, you know, it was a sting operation. How much of it was, yeah, go ahead, drive that van down there. Sure, why not? And, oh, here's some fake bombs to take with you.
Well, this is it. How much of it is this thing? How much of it is entrapment?
Yeah, you see some guy who gets off a plane, I'm going to start a cell and I'm going to bring down the U.S. Yeah, well, good luck on that. And where'd you go to find your cohorts? The FBI. That seems to always work that way, doesn't it?
Well, if he really is this guy who wanted to do this, then fortunately, perhaps it is how it works.
Yeah. Well, I know that's where I would go to find my people who know how to do things. And finally, the fiscal cliff, more talk on the fiscal cliff?
Well, actually, it's the lack of talk on the fiscal cliff.
No.
John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, had a conference call with some Republicans, a lot of Republicans today, and was asked on the call for an update on the sequester, as it's known. It's Washington talk, really, for all these automatic spending cuts to domestic spending as well as the Pentagon that are going to come into place at the beginning of January. That's when he said that he and the president haven't spoken since July about the fiscal cliff and everybody falling off it in January. And Boehner apparently said it's all about the election, basically the message being that nothing's going to get done at all until after the election. He also said on the call that he's not in favor of, quote, sweeping legislation during the lame duck session. So he said that earlier this month. It was in one of my emails to, about when he was talking to Politico that he doesn't think that the lame duck session should be used for any large legislation, any big deals. He just thinks that some kind of small deal should be done in terms of dealing with the fiscal cliff. He thinks that this is not the time with people who might have lost their jobs in the election. Those are not people who should be involved in making big decisions.
Yeah, well, there's that. But the other part of this is if Obama wins, it's another opportunity to hold out the hostage situation and drag out and make things worse. But if Romney wins, You want to, you know, drag it out so you can blame Obama, and then all of the, you know, the big stuff that you might do and that might actually work, like, you know, infrastructure and, you know, kind of things like that, that then Romney can take credit for.
There you go.
So, you know, I don't expect much to get done during the lame duck except more finger pointing and waving, and my side's better.
I think there'll be a good bit of that.
But again, you know, if we could just get them all out, just unelect all of them.
There's always that.
That would never happen, and it wouldn't work either. Anyway, Victoria, always great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
So do you.
Our good friend Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
Together. The Rick Smith Show.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at ganleylaw.com.
Earth, sky.
In 2007, the planet Saturn's large moon Titan was found to have bodies of liquid, lakes, and seas on its surface. In August 2012, NASA passed over an idea to land a craft in the seas of Titan.
Then, in late September 2012, Spanish engineers announced their concept for a boat to sail Titan's seas. They're proposing a mission they call the Titan Lake In-Situ Sampling Propelled Explorer, or TALIS. It would include a boat probe that would land in the middle of a large lake in the north polar region of Titan.
After a successful landing, the boat would move across the lake, propelled by wheels or paddles. It'd head for a nearby coastline on Titan's lake, taking scientific measurements along the way. The engineers suggest the mission would last around 6 months to a year.
A Spanish engineering firm called Grupo Sener and the Centro de Astrobiología in Madrid, Spain, formed a partnership to study the Titan boat concept. They say the mission isn't far past the concept phase at this time.
And by the way, these lakes on Saturn's moon Titan don't contain liquid water. Instead, they contain liquid methane. Exploring them would be exciting. We have more at earthsky.org. Search for the words Titan boat. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
You know, if the Democrats said we had a war on caterpillars and every mainstream media outlet talked about the fact that Republicans have a war on caterpillars, then we'd have problems with caterpillars. I mean, the fact of the matter is it's a fiction.
Inequality I just ignore. Don't know what a golden rule is for. But I do know a thing or two. And if all the states were red, no blue, what a wonderful world this would be.
Yes, especially if you could consider women equal to caterpillars. You know, I love that analogy. Yeah, women, caterpillars, yeah, same thing. And I don't know if you noticed this during the debate. It was one of those moments where, you know, you're listening to Romney speak. You're listening to him to go through his positions as they are at this very moment. And you go, okay, well, where are the flips going to come? Well, he goes and he says, I just note that I don't believe that bureaucrats in Washington should tell someone whether they can use contraception or not. He says, I don't believe employers should tell someone whether they can have contraceptive care or not. Every woman in America should have access to contraception. Am I missing something? If you'll remember, and help me with this because maybe I'm wrong. Maybe all of the talk about there's a war on religion. Wasn't that based on the fact that employers, if they offer health insurance, the insurance companies have to offer some type of contraceptive? Did I miss something? And that you had the radicals in the Catholic Church, not all of the Catholic Church, just the handful of radicals, and the radical right-wing politicians going, oh, it's a war on religion! Because if you remember what I said from the very beginning when this whole feigned outrage over religion came up, I said, this is not a religious issue. This is an employment issue. This is an issue between a worker and their employer. The fact that it's a religious employer, to me, holds no bearing. I should not be able to tell the insurance company that, well, you know what? We're going to allow you to offer Viagra care for men, but no contraception for women. It seems kind of dumb. But it's what's going on. Now, they did make an exception. They went, and this is where the Democrats caved, like they do on many worker issues. Because the Republicans, you know, they'll burn down the House, man. Scorched earth, they don't care. So they made an exemption. Okay, well, if you're a religious institution, well, you know, we'll make this exemption. As where I was saying, look, as an employer, you're going to offer health care. Those health care plans, they should be chosen by the employee and the insurance company. That's where they should be. If we're going to continue this employer-based healthcare, which I'll let you know right from the start, I'm against. I don't think you should be beholden to the company that you work for your health insurance. I think if we had national healthcare, you would see an awful lot more mobility. You'd see people leaving jobs. You'd see people starting their own companies. And you'd see better employers because you know what? They know you're not stuck there. But in one sentence, Romney completely undid the entire right-wing frame of this war on religion. But if you go back and you look at Romney's position a couple of months ago, because remember what he said, I'd like to note, I don't believe that bureaucrats should tell someone whether they can use contraception or not. He says, I don't believe employers should tell someone whether they can have contraceptive care or not. Every woman in America should have access to contraceptives. That's his words. Yet he's someone who wants to defund Planned Parenthood, where a lot of people go to get affordable contraceptive care. Because they actually use a sliding scale. You know, if you're low income, you're going to pay less than if you're someone who has high income. Because we want to make sure that people have the option. In fact, the poorest women should have the greatest options. Because you know what? You don't want to have a child when you can't afford to take care of yourself. And to me, the best way to make sure that doesn't happen is not to point your finger, not to come up with nonsensical abstinence only, but to help people protect themselves and to be sane and rational about it. Now, Romney also wants to restore the copays for any birth control, getting rid of the requirement that insurance companies offer it to women without a copay. Now, if you want to hold down the number of births, unwanted pregnancies, that's how you do it. You want to hold down the number of abortions? That's a good way to start. Just a thought. Understand also, Romney supports the personhood amendment, which means that this fertilized moment, whenever you think that maybe conception began, that's when life, you know, and it's a metabolic, you know, it's purely a cellular thing to them. So no plan B, no, none of that. He also wants to go global. And he wants to do what the Bush administration did. And you look around the world, we're pushing 7 billion people. And poverty for women across this globe is astronomical. By giving women the opportunity to hold off having children until, you know, they can afford it, would help them. But what Romney wants to do is he wants to reinstate that global gag rule. You know what Bush did. You're not going to get any funding from the U.S. You're not going to get any funding whatsoever. Then we're not going to fund any international organizations. We're not going to fund anybody who even considers talking about abortion or even would even, heaven forbid, fathom the idea that maybe they would perform one. And you go, well, if you want to hold down the number of abortions, which I'm in favor of, wouldn't it be a good idea to prevent it? Just a thought. And then there's the Blunt Amendment. And this flies completely in the face of every woman in America should have access to contraceptives. Because the Blunt Amendment would give employers, would give people like me the ability to say, you know what, you as my employee, you can't have contraceptive care in the insurance that I'm going to provide you. It's not part of your pay package now. It's now something that I give you as a benevolent employer. It's really a very twisted mentality, but it is the wealth class mentality. So, again, this is one of those moments where John Huntsman is right. Is he running for the White House or the Waffle House? Because he supports the Blunt Amendment, says that employers can deny women access because of religious reasons. But yet during the debate, when it suited him, when he was talking to women face to face, when he looked them in the eye, he said, you know what? You should have access. No bureaucrat should tell you. No employer should tell you. You should have access. So which is it? Which is it? Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
To America. Rick Smith.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service. 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
How can we be a people that fight for America if we don't know who America is or what we're all about? This is, in my opinion, a conscious effort on the part of the left, who has a huge influence on our curriculum, to desensitize America to what American values are, so they're more pliable to the new values that they would like to impose on America.
Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. As always, if you missed any portion of our program, it's there at the podcast form for you to enjoy and take with you on your smartphone as well. Stitcher. So, again, take the program on the go. Big news. Ahold USA, the parent company for Giant, they've withdrawn their request for the tax handout. So Lower Allen Township, the West Shore School District in Cumberland County, they have withdrawn their request. Because I think, and rightly so, what we've been talking about here on the program, corporate welfare. And to be honest, they screwed it up. And they now realize their mistake that they should have held the area hostage first. It's kind of, I know it's a nuanced position. I know it's, but it's called leverage. They claim they're going to create 400 to 850 jobs at some point. Again, the question is, will it be 850 jobs? And how many are we losing all around the area? I would guess it's going to be more than 850. I'm thinking that the reason they do this, to cut the number of people. Pretty simple, don't you think? They wouldn't be building a huge facility. They wouldn't be going through all of this expense if there wasn't that return on investment. And, they screwed up. They lost, I think it was about $400,000. They probably could have strong-armed the local community out of it. To keep their good name, they chose to at this point, which they probably weren't getting anyway. even though the governor and the Republicans just love giving money away to big corporations that don't need it. They've opted, you know, kind of give up the, you know, the backlash that you know is coming. Decided not to. Decided, we're going to pull back. I'm sure there's going to be some strong-arming down the line. I'm sure it's coming. Maybe they'll take advantage of that $5 million handout they just rammed through. We shall soon see. Big story out of London, and this is one of those moments where you go, you know, sometimes you're a little hard on policemen, but a cop in London evidently tased a blind man. See a blind guy walking down the street, taser. He thought the white stick that he was carrying, you know, that with the little red tip on it, thought it was a samurai sword. And I go, you know, I can see how that could happen. Sure. You know, the guy's walking erratic. He's swinging that stick around because he's trying to find out where the telephone pole and where the curb is so he doesn't walk out into traffic. And you naturally, it's a samurai sword, you know. So first thought, tase him. There you go. And a local story that kind of caught my attention, made me kind of laugh. In more my neck of the woods, North Middleton Township, the police arrested a guy, accused him of trying to frighten a three-year-old boy. Evidently, the guy was standing on the street, making faces, pointing. He was staring, he was laughing, and he was pointing. And he scared the three-year-old. So he was charged with harassment and disorderly conduct. And me, I thought, you know, instead of going through all of this, somebody should have just gone out, kicked him in the behind, and been done with it. He'd have moved along. Too much going on. Anyway, again, if you missed any portion of the program, therickSmithShow.com, you can stand and stare here if you want. We won't tase you. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Get the podcast there if you missed any portion of the program thus far. Also, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Have a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the sway.